no Android developer ever said, God, I love Java.
From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
In this episode, we talk to Dan Kim about Kotlin. Dan is an Android developer at the company Basecamp. Basecamp builds project management and team communication software, but is actually pretty well known in the software circles for the likes of DHH, the guy who created Rails, and their popular blog, A Signal Versus Noise. Now, Dan too has some great posts on this blog about Kotlin, and he was really early on the Kotlin train. Don also has been working with Kotlin for quite some time now. So among this group, I'm actually the new kid on the Kotlin blog. So in this episode, instead of trying to go into every single small detail and nuance and syntax about Kotlin, the language, instead, we take a slightly more general approach and talk about starting out on Kotlin. I ask both Don and Dan multiple questions on how does one go about migrating an Android codebase to Kotlin? What are some things I should watch out for when using the language? This and a whole lot more. This was a fun episode with Dan, and we hope you enjoy it as much as we did. On to the show.
Kaushik, we're back home from Google I.O. finally.
Yes, this Google I.O. was a lot of fun, actually, and some big announcements as well.
It was great. That was fantastic. The only thing that they did not announce was the amount of our allergy medicine that I needed to bring.
You know, both of us kind of had a tough run there. As you're going and interviewing people, we were almost sneezing on them. So close saves there.
It was. But speaking of people we were interviewing, one of the folks that we were there talking to, we were discussing, and he was on last week's show, where we were just kind of going back and forth with various topics before we kind of hopped into interviewing him. And one of the topics we ended up talking about was remote work, and then we ended up to where he worked, and then we talked about, you know, ended up on Kotlin, which seems to be the humongous language that was announced here. And we thought it would be great to bring him on the show here and talk about Kotlin. So without further ado, I would like to announce Dan Kim to the show here. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Dan, you bleed Kotlin, right? From what I can see from some of these blog posts, you seem to be a big proponent of Kotlin. So,
yeah, I am. And the announcement caught us completely by surprise. I don't think very many people had any idea that was going to be announced the first class support for Kotlin. So when we heard that news, we were super excited. We've been using it at Basecamp for about a year since it hit 1.0. It's truly been like life-changing as a programmer who's been doing Java for 15 years. It is truly life-changing. So it's been great.
What was, when you guys were watching the presentation for the keynote, we were all sitting there watching it. I was waiting for something nice to happen, and there were some cool things that came out, but my jaw literally hit the floor when I saw, and here's the thing that stuck in my mind was, they were up on screen, they showed the lock pattern screen, they started drawing this design. I'm like, halfway through the K, and I'm like, that's the Kotlin design, and then everybody just lost it.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, like I said, nobody was expecting it. When I started seeing the lock screen draw, I was kind of zoned out a little bit. The I.O. announcements or the I.O. keynote is kind of long. I think it runs, I don't know when the announcement happened. I think it was maybe 70 minutes in or something like that.
Yeah.
It had been a little while. So I was kind of, in and out of watching it. And then I heard that and I immediately snapped to attention. And then I kind of looked around because I wasn't sure if I heard the right thing. I thought maybe I was hearing things. Did they say Kotlin? I was looking around and there were a lot of empty, like sort of blank looks in people's faces and a lot of cheering. So that was pretty awesome. It was pretty cool.
We had this conversation while we were there, Dan. Or maybe this was on Slack or one of the other channels. The last time I was so excited about something was when I got onto RxJava, right? Because it felt like it was almost a new paradigm of mm-hmm. programming. And it sort of like added a lot of excitement. And obviously it is super powerful and there were other things that came with it. So I was super excited. And I remember telling Dan, hey, you should really start using Rx, because anyone who I've recommended Rx to has never gone back, and they've always come back and thanked me for, like, you know, coercing them into going into Rx. And it was funny because Dan said the exact same thing about Kotlin to me. He's like, anyone who I've recommended Kotlin to has never gone back, so you should try it. And I was like, huh, that is a good job. And I've started to really like it, but obviously I never, like, went all in, and I could not bring myself to do that because there wasn't this official sort of, like, blessing from Google. And now that it's there, like, I've started using it, and Dan was totally right. Like, I love Kotlin. I just can't stop thinking about Kotlin.
So, Dan, what's one of the things that you, like, you've been working with it for a while, but I guess to even rewind, if you guys have been using it for over a year now, what was one of the things that really, or some of the things that hyped you up about it to get so excited to use Kotlin, to even try it in a production code base? And the reason why I ask this is because usually third-party languages don't get that much love, because a lot of folks are afraid to move to them because they know that, well, this may not be the supported language mm-hmm. in a few years, and now we have all this legacy stuff that no one knows anymore. What was the kind of the big thing for you guys or your team to say, hey, this is worth us kind of hopping into? Is there anything exciting at all?
Yeah, I mean, logistically, I guess we weren't super concerned about the language going away. We knew that it compiled down to Java bytecode, and it was made by JetBrains, who had a sort of a long track record of making great tools for Java. Obviously, Android Studio is built on IntelliJ. And there was also, even at that time, which was early last year, there was still a fairly decent amount of sort of people talking about it. Not a ton, but, like, Jake Wharton obviously was speaking about it. Mm-hmm. And there was enough there that we thought it was worth a try. And the worst case is that we'd have to come back and maybe, you know, go back to Java on a few classes, and really that wouldn't have been a big deal for us. So we started slow. We started off with I think a few, maybe like helper classes or utility classes, and just kind of converted those very slowly over time. And you know, it was beautiful to see. And when we think about what got me excited about Kotlin, it was never really sort of one specific language feature. There's a lot of different things about it that make it really interesting. What really worked for me was the fact that it was like fun again. It was like fun mm-hmm. to program. Yeah. And it sort of fit my brain and it clicked. And that's kind of a harder thing to explain to somebody. Like, Java makes sense to me. Ruby kind of makes sense to me, even though it's not typed. And then I looked at, like, when I used to look at Objective-C, like, it didn't really make sense to me. So there's a bunch of different languages I looked at, but...
Hey, wait, are you allowed to say that as a Basecamp developer? I mean, you guys...
Didn't you guys build Rails?
That thing, I don't know, what do they call it? Rails or something?
I didn't say I didn't like Rails and Ruby. I'm just saying that it doesn't necessarily fit my brain perfectly. It fits, and that's the thing, I think. When you hear somebody like David DHH talk about, like, Ruby and Rails, mm-hmm. you hear how, like, excited he gets about it. You hear how it really attaches to his brain. He has an emotional sort of response about it. Right, that's kind of what I felt like with Kotlin. Like, I'd written Java for 15 years, and I understood it, and I knew all its quirks, and I knew all of, like, the good things and bad things about it, but I was never, like, excited about it. It was always just sort of a means to an end. And, you know, there was probably even a point in my career where I was kind of burnt out on programming because of Java, I don't know. But but then when I saw Kotlin, I started using it, I was like, wow, this is really great. Like, it really just hit home for me, and I understood it. It made a lot of sense to me. All the conveniences of the language just started to click for me. And so that's what really got me interested and excited about it. Not the fact that, I mean, there are a bunch of really awesome features that we can talk about, but it was really just that having something to hang on to that was really big.
Yeah, that is so true. No Android developer ever said, God, I love Java. You know, nobody has ever said, like, you know, it's almost like an apologetic sort of thing. They're like, yeah, I mean, we use Java, but the IDE is better. And, like, you know, there's always, like, this switch that sort of, like, we try to, like, justify ourselves. But, I mean, Kotlin truly is a beautiful language. And now, you know, folks can proudly say, hey, Kotlin's pretty amazing. And we like working on Kotlin for Android.
Right, right.
Kaushik, you recently started using Kotlin. How do you feel about it now that you've just started using it? And what made you start using it?
A, there is always the learning aspect, right? Like, it's something that's relatively new that you can learn. And, you know, as engineers, like, you always like learning new things, right? So that was obviously one aspect to it, but I could never justify like learning it for the sake of learning it, right?
Yep.
Many of these folks, like, I've been following some of the things that you guys have been saying. Obviously, like, Jake Warden had that document. We, in a previous episode, we also talked to Hadi Arili, yep. And we'll make sure to add a link to that in the show notes. That was, I don't remember which episode, but I think it's episode 20. So it's like all the way back then.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
So that also, like, you know, I do know, I've like been dabbling a little with the language, and like those few times I wrote with the language, it was always amazing. There was like, I never had any doubt, but I never like really used the language. And it's only when I've started using this language with more of its like true power and like the features, that's when I felt it's like pretty cool, right? There are like a couple of things that I want to like run through, because like I feel in this conversation I'm more of the noob, so I'm probably going to have more of the questions here than you guys, right? One thing I definitely feel that it's nicer, it's more concise, right? Now I actually feel this is sort of like a double-edged sword, but I'm gonna actually pose this question back to you guys. What do you think? Would you say it's concise, or would you say it's like more sort of terse, if that makes sense?
I mean, from my perspective, it's definitely concise and readable, and that it really pays off in a lot of different ways. One, it's just flat out easier to read. So when you're writing your own code, you have a better sense of what's going on. Mm-hmm. When you're reading other people's code, when you're doing pull request reviews or whatever else, it's just so much clearer because there's no noise around the boilerplate, and you don't have a lot of the ceremony that's required in Java. And so like one really simple example that I talk about a lot is the fact that, you know, you don't have to declare a variable by type. You can just call it a val or var. So you don't have to say string name equals something. You can just say val name, and then you're kind of good to go. So you don't have all this extra stuff with, that sort of ceremony around type declaration. You don't have to use a new keyword ever. You don't have to use semicolons. So, nice. Yeah. So like, I mean, these are small things, right? These aren't huge, huge important features. But add that all up where you don't have to think about the type before you write a variable, where you don't have to use a new keyword, you don't have to write semicolons. You do that a few thousand times over the course of a month or something like that. And it's a huge time saver. And so you take away, you strip out all that kind of stuff. And once you see it in a large file, the conciseness and the readability is much, much better than Java. And I think to your point, though, Kaushik, there are elements of the language where you can get yourself in trouble. Like if you're extra concise, if you start bordering on terse, that can definitely happen. And I wrote some stuff on Medium about how one of the things to be aware of is to kind of not go overboard with some of the things that Kotlin gives you, because you can kind of hang yourself at times if you go overboard on some of the language features.
Right, right.
But I think that's just like any language or any framework. Like you can go overboard for sure. And you kind of figure out where the guardrails are over time and what makes sense and what doesn't.
I completely agree with what you said, Dan, about how it's concise, and it's just those small little things. Like, I don't need semicolons. I don't have to define the types. It's the certain language features, like the let expression, the Elvis operator, all these little things. Now they're idiomatic to Kotlin in some sense, but it's like, once you learn these things and you understand what they do, it actually increases the developer happiness, in my opinion. And it does for me. And that's one big thing that I actually picked up from DHH with his whole thing about Rails and Ruby, is it was just friendly. It was an environment to him that was very friendly, and he enjoyed working in it. And that's kind of how I felt working in Kotlin. I'll do something in Kotlin like, oh, I can use a lambda expression here. Oh, I can use this quick one-liner, or I can use this data class. And of a sudden I'm like, oh, that's it. Now I get all this other extra stuff for free. And then immediately, like, I found myself day to day, like, just enjoying my work much more. And I didn't treat Java as just like a means to an end. Kotlin was actually kind of fun to be like, okay, and now I can actually truly focus on maybe the business problem at hand and really start flying through the code itself, which has made it really nice for me.
You know, again, when people ask like what's one thing or what are a couple things you like about the language, there's a bunch of different things, but in aggregate, all the things you do over time, over weeks or months or years, when you use all those things together, the conciseness and flow control and higher order functions, you put all that stuff together and you see that in one, you know, just let's say one class, and you see how it all works together. that's mm-hmm. when you're like, oh, that's the moment where you realize this is for me. This is what makes sense to me. And I can't believe I've been fighting, you know, swimming upstream this whole other time, doing it the hard ways with all these tools that are available. So it's totally just like a light bulb moment. Eventually, you know, I think, and Kaushik, you probably had this with RX too. Like there's a moment which you really like see it and you get it.
Oh yeah.
And you're like, absolutely. Okay, I'm going to hook onto this. I'm going to hook onto this thing because it's clearly better than what I was doing.
Right. There's like that interim period where you're basically discovering, it's like a dance that you have, right? Like you're discovering what's happening, but once it clicks, then you suddenly just like opens up like this universe of like things, right?
Yeah.
Now for Dan, there's a couple of ways, you know, you mentioned before that you don't have to define your types, and you just said something like var or val when I'm defining these val, you know, these variables or fields or whatever they are. Now, for a lot of people have probably heard the difference between var and val, but again, there's a lot of folks out there that haven't started using Kotlin yet, or this is maybe one of their first introductions to it. Would you mind breaking it down for the folks out there, what the difference between var and val is, and maybe when I'd want to use one and the other?
Yeah, I think as a whole, the language encourages you to use vals. So basically, vals are effectively immutable variables. I think there's some discussion about whether that's actually true. I think technically speaking, they're read only because you can set getters on them and stuff like that. But for all intents and purposes, vals are effectively immutable values or variables. So anything you assign to it will just stay that way. And so I guess along the lines of functional programming, which I'm not super familiar with, you just have sort of less potential for side effects. That val cannot be changed through the, let's say, your method or whatever. Whereas a var can change values. You can reassign it to something else, or it can change values or something like that. So I think as a whole, it's encouraged that you use vals whenever it makes sense or whenever you can, so that you don't have any side effects and things aren't changing underneath you. And vars you can use just like you would sort of a typical Java variable, basically. It's just a very small, subtle distinction. But again, it's one of those things where it's just like it's slightly safer if you maybe use a val. And if you're encouraged to use those over time, you'll start to develop sort of some muscle memory around, I should be using vals here instead of vars. And I think the compiler will even complain, not complain, the lint checks will tell you, hey, this isn't ever reassigned, you should make it a val, just to make it clear. And again, if you think about comparing that to something like Java, where you say string something or string this, you don't even have that distinction. You don't even know, like, maybe this thing will change or maybe it won't. I have no idea, unless you find, you know, you put final on it or whatever. But again, that's more words, more stuff that you're just tacking on to to your expressions. So that's the basic difference for most people.
That makes sense. And I mean, for folks who have that confusion, if at all, like, oh, is it like var, val, because there's only one alphabet difference, just think about the actual word, right? Variable is what a var is, which means the value can change, hence mutable, and value is val, which means it's just a single value, right? Like the value object kind of things that we have talked in the past. So
that's a good end. I never thought of that.
Now, Kaushik, you had mentioned before just recently that the IDE is very good about catching this and kind of harassing you to change this from like, hey, this is not being, you know, mutated at all, so you can change this to val, so which is super nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Because as I was like getting to, because I was not sure, and so I was like, oh, let me just like keep this as a var and then like change it later. But like the IDE itself says, hey, you can actually just totally change this to a val, which is also really nice, because then, like, you know, again, because Kotlin is by the JetBrains folks, it just makes it infinitely easier. Like, they've really upped the tooling on this. So they're really trying to get you to like how the language is to be used, right?
Yeah. I wanted to bring up one thing to circle back with the nulls. And it's the fact that if you are going to use nulls inside of your application when you're using Kotlin, a lot of the times you'll have to, in Kotlin, you'll say, exclamation point right after that value to say, hey, I am positive that I know what I'm doing and I want you to go ahead and force this thing through. One thing that I have done and seen done at various companies is any time that those double exclamation marks are present during a code review, it's usually a red flag of like, okay, whoa, are we sure we know what we're doing? And that's usually something where multiple team members get involved, have a conversation about, is this something we should be forcing to null? And the only usually caveat to that is maybe if it's inside of test code and we know that, hey, this is, we're providing this test data, we know it's not null. But other than that, it might be a good heuristic to just double check
I'm so happy you brought that up. So that's the question I had for you guys, right? Because when I started converting stuff to Kotlin, right, by default, when you know the convert to from Java to Kotlin thing, the IDE happily just like converts it to Kotlin. But in most cases, and exactly, it was like in exactly the same case. Like I was converting a test that we had in Java, unit test, to Kotlin, and then it just like littered the whole thing with double bangs, right? Which is fine. But like I wanted to ask, in your experiences, right, for both of you, have you ever found like good use cases for like the double bang? Have you found yourself needing, at least in the Android world, right? Have you found yourselves needing to use the double bang, or usually have you always found a way around it? Like just so like our listeners know, like, hey, really, both of you, because you've used Kotlin for some time now in production code bases, and if you've never found a reason, then you really, really need to think hard, right?
I'm not going to lie. Our code base for sure has some double bangs in it. Not a lot. And Don's totally right. Like it's a smell that something maybe weird or sort of unnatural is going on. It could just be Java interop. It could be if you have something lazy, if you're lazily loading something and you know it's going to be there by the time it hits something. I think one place we use it a lot that in effect we would expect something to crash is like we use a lot of URL mapping and stuff like that. So any activity that we go to, any controller that we expect a URL to be there in like most cases, especially in this one controller that we have. In the case that the URL is not there, it's going to completely fail. Everything else is going to fail for us. So we use a double bang there because if it fails, we want to know that it's failing, that a case like that kind of should crash because the app basically relies on it. So I think there are edge cases where maybe, and maybe I'm just justifying it by being lazy, but there are areas where maybe it's okay. But you're right, the initial Kotlin conversion from the plugin will throw you a lot of double bangs. And I think that's somewhat purposefully. It wants you to look at those, examine those, understand nullability a bit. But yeah, you'll get a lot of those up front.
And it almost points to the fact that Java is like, you know, if you think about it, like Java does kind of like, that's why Java has so many NPEs, right? Because like the direct conversion does sort of like require you to have a lot of like these unsafe null conditions. So.
Right. Yeah, and I'm not gonna lie. Like I would do conversions, and I'd see all those double bangs, I would just shake my head and sort of cry a little bit because I'm like, oh, I have to address all these double bangs now. Like, you know, anybody who's done a conversion from Java to Kotlin, you know, short of like the superstar programmers, but anybody who's done that sees those, and you're like, oh, like I thought this was just gonna work, and now I gotta kind of comb through this whole thing. Especially when you're first starting out. Like later, you know, you can fly through those, but when you're first starting out, it's already kind of confusing because you're learning a new language, and then on top of that, seeing all sorts of syntax you're not used to, it can get a little funky.
I've also experienced the same thing. Anytime I'm dealing with Java interop, it seems to be always the culprit that I need to deal with some type of nulls in that case. And Dan brought up a good point that there are exceptional cases, and this for me varies from client to client, but there are certain clients of mine that, just like Dan's app, if a particular value is missing and it shouldn't, you know, if it shouldn't be null, the whole entire app won't work. Then at that point, we need to crash because there's a higher level problem that we need to address at that point. So there are some in the code bases that I have worked with. And the ones that I've seen a lot of times are usually around some type of list ordering where I need to grab a certain value out of the third item from a list that could be null. At that point, we've maybe checked before that it's not null. And hopefully, you know, usually the Kotlin plugin does a pretty good job at checking that to know that I don't need to force it. But sometimes there's still some weird edge cases where we have to use a double bang to get the values out.
All right. So this is another thing that came in as I go about my process of converting to Kotlin, right? Like the thing that we mentioned, like Dan, when you mentioned that you switched like your test and like there was like these double bangs all over, right? So now I'm starting to think, okay, so how should I go about converting, right? Like, did you all in say, no, we're going to only be Kotlin, so I'm going to like convert my whole code base, like this whole package, boom, everything convert to Kotlin, use the IDE? Or did you like sort of like take one class file and then say, oh, I'm going to like convert just this part to Kotlin and then I'm going to slowly start moving the other parts? I'm curious, like, because as I see it, right, like the direct conversion doesn't necessarily do the most idiomatic thing. So I'm curious, like, how do you folks go about your conversion?
Yeah, definitely. Great question. You know, for us, we started about a year ago. So what we wanted to do was kind of take it slow. We weren't an official, or Kotlin wasn't a first class official language yet. So we were kind of, you know, tiptoeing around how much we wanted to do. The couple things I would say is that first, you want to start slow. And because there's, you know, perfect interop between Java and Kotlin, I would take something very, very small. It doesn't even have to be a whole class. It can literally be like one utility function that you want to take and put into one Kotlin file that has one function. I mean, that's really small, but you could do that and just and rewrite that in Kotlin yourself. You can write that manually, or you can use the autoconverter if you want, but you could try rewriting it manually. And that's literally the smallest step you could take. My advice to people is often to do something real. And this goes back to sort of the wow moment and programmer happiness and things like that. That when you write something real, if it's a utility function or something like that, and you get to see it working in your live app, that can mean a lot to somebody. When you see something you just wrote in Kotlin and it works, that utility method works. And I'm not knocking tests or anything like that. I know Don's a big big tester, but you know, it's not. I've at least in my experience, it's not the same. If you get a Kotlin test running, you're like, woohoo, I got a test running. But I think it's more valuable, at least for someone like me, to see a real piece of app code functioning in the app that I had written. So my advice is to try something real, something small. The other thing you can do is, if you're not quite comfortable writing your own Kotlin, and I wouldn't expect anybody right out of the gate to be, what you can do is you can use the autoconverter, see how far that gets you. And since you're just doing one small method, you know, even if you have double bangs or a lot of syntactical weird things, it probably won't be too big of a hurdle. And you put I would keep your Java source file handy and just kind of keep them side by side. Yeah. And you can just kind of look to see what the difference is and see how the converter attacked that problem, basically. And then you can kind of see, you'll have a reference point of, okay, I'm familiar with Java. This is a Java way of doing it. Here's the Kotlin file that was auto-converted. And I can get a sense of what's what. You just have sort of it just gives you a better space of like what's going on. And then from there, you know, the converter probably gets you, I don't know, 60-ish, maybe 70% of the way there, something like that. You can take it that last 30% by doing things more the idiomatic ways. And JetBrains has really good documentation as far as, mm-hmm. they even have a page that's literally just like idioms, like here are the Kotlin idioms. Yeah. If you're writing stuff, here's the page you can just look at as like a reference of, here's generally how you write stuff in the language. You can look at that page and almost, you know, get yourself pretty far along. That would be my advice.
Very cool. I'll add that into the show notes. Don, what about you? How did you go about your Kotlin expeditions?
So for me, being a consultant, it's a little bit different because it varies team by team. So I've kind of bucketized the approach into three different buckets here. And I'll kind of talk about each one for a second. One is, you're the solo person you're the only person working on the application. That's bucket one. Number two is, you work with a team and the whole team is completely on board with going to Kotlin. And then you have the third bucket, which is, you're part of a team, but part of the team or all of the team other than yourself is apprehensive about moving to Kotlin. So let's look at a few seconds on each one of these to figure out how you'd go about it. Solo, that's kind of obvious. I'm going to follow the same advice that Dan's going to give, is kind of just hop in there and start writing some actual production code. Do a little bit, do that utility class, do maybe one feature. You can maybe even do like, you're going to do this one particular package. But usually what I advise at that point in time is, if you're going to start doing it just to get familiar with the language, just take one file or even your next new feature that you're working on and just write that in Kotlin. If you need to go in and change a fragment or an activity, just convert that one to Kotlin and make the adjustments as you go along. Don't do everything whole hog. Make sure that you're all right with it and moving forward. So that's kind of the easy one. The next one's very similar. Your whole team is down with it and you're on that team. At that point, I would do the same thing. Take a particular, for example, doing your take that feature and implement that feature in Kotlin or that utility class. But when you're working in a particular team, you need to be on the same page to say, okay, look, everybody, we're going to try Kotlin for an extended period of time, maybe for the next month or 2 months. And then we're going to sit down and kind of have a meeting together and say, hey, how does everyone feel about it? Do we like it? Are there things we don't like about it? Is there anything we should change? And then kind of have that decision again. Do we want to continue moving forward? The great thing about Kotlin is that it's, again, it goes down to bytecode. And what you can do is, if for some reason you get in your team or even by yourself, you get to that point where you don't want to use Kotlin, which I don't know why you'd ever get to that decision, but if you did, you could go inside of Android Studio, for example, and go to like Menu Tools, Kotlin, I believe, and then I think it's Show Kotlin Bytecode. And then what we'll actually do is show the Kotlin bytecode, which is interesting in itself, but you can click on the decompile button to get Java code back. So if you really wanted to, there's actually a backwards way out of it. And I think there's probably even been some IntelliJ plugins written for this as well. Again, why you would do that, I don't know, but that option does exist. So if you are scared that you can't back out, there are ways you can get out. Now, the third option is also, which it seems to probably be the one you're really going to work, you run into at a company, especially when you're on a larger team, is they're apprehensive. It's a new language. It's a lot of change. And let's face it, a lot of people don't like change. They're familiar with Java. They know all the idioms. Like Dan said earlier, he's worked with it for 15 years. He knew how everything worked. You get into Kotlin, it's something new. You may introduce bugs you're not aware of. So how do you go about doing it then? There's multiple different ways. One way is to go down the whole test route, which is write your tests in Kotlin. That kind of is like the, I would almost say like the gateway drug into Kotlin. It doesn't provide you with the real experience to say, here's the features you're going to get out of Kotlin. Here's why it's so great. It'll give you that kind of that gentle introduction to it. And then at that point, you may want to say, all right, we like it. Let's start introducing it into an application. And usually at that point, if you still have an apprehensive team, you got to be on the same page. You got to communicate, talk with everybody. And then I usually recommend saying, hey, take a team of, let's say there's 10 people on a team. Take a couple people that are going to work on a feature, maybe one that's not mission critical, and have them write that feature in Kotlin and have the other team members code review it. So everyone's involved in the process. That'll introduce everyone to Kotlin, get a couple of people working with it, and then again, have a meeting in a couple of weeks. Kind of get everybody on the same page. And if everybody likes it, do it to another one. Do it to another feature. Do it to another feature until you eventually get to the point where you realize, you know what? Hey, we really love this language. We're going to keep moving forward. Everything's Kotlin. Or you eventually say, hey, you know what? This is not going to work out. We're just going to go back to Java and we'll either reverse what we've done or whatever. So that's kind of the three buckets that I've run into. And that's how I handle
like that.
It.
I like that.
Yeah, I think that's really, really solid advice from Don. The part about kind of just baby stepping your way into it. You know, we've been doing it for a year. We're actually 100% Kotlin now at Basecamp. But it took us, you know, 13 months or something like that. I forgot what it was. It took us a year. And I just looked at the commits recently. I think we had something like 18,000 lines of Java at one point when we started. And so it's not like we did this in 2 months or a month or whatever. And I have a feeling that since Kotlin is an officially supported language now, that people are going to be like whole hog going nuts into it. And it really doesn't have to be that way. Like with the Java interop, you can take your sweet time, get people comfortable with it. You're not going to be, you know, on the cutting edge of anything, but it doesn't really matter. I think if you take it slow and over the course of a year or a year and a half or whatever, it can totally be done in a safe way that gets everybody comfortable with it. I think that's pretty important.
Yeah. I mean, I'm working with code bases right now. They're just going on 7, 8, 9 years old. I mean, there are thousands and tens of thousands of lines in Java that is core, that's working, it's not broken. And I follow the principle, if it's not broke, don't fix it in that regard. Like, there's no reason to go back and touch that code. Let's just leave it there. If we need to go back and change a feature, implement something different on that screen, okay, let's handle it then when we hop into it. But like Dan said, there's no reason to kind of just, you know, go all hog in and do it all at once.
That makes sense. So I'm going to push both of your arguments just a little by asking another question. So I did a very similar thing. I used, like, you know, there was like a static date function, date utils function that I had, like a date helper utility. I converted that, no problems. It was straight up. And this is like a straight up Pojo or Poco or whatever, right? So there was no problems. Like, you know, I converted Kotlin, everyone's happy. Yay, first bit of Kotlin code in production. Great, right? And Kotlin does like the cool extension function thing as well. So you could use it as an extension function. But if you drop back in Java, then you can also like use it like a traditional date utils that you're used to, right? I did that. But then like, okay, so what's my next step, right? Because at one point when I'm developing an Android app, I have Dagger, I have Butterknife, I have like all these other crazy annotation processing libraries, right? And at some point, I'm not going to be able to, the change is going to be big enough. At least that's in my mind. That's how I think, right? So how do you guys approach when you reach that step, right? Did you, before we actually go into like specifics, for example, I'm also curious to see like what were the libraries that you used for the view binding and all that kind of stuff, right? But before we even do that, right, let's maybe take one of them. Like, for example, Dagger is, or even Retrofit, right? Those are very far-reaching, at least in my mind, those are far-reaching libraries, right? So did you have to do like a mild conversion there, or did you actually Because like I like the idea of doing small conversions, but I mean, my Dagger code and my sort of retrofit code is like all over the place, right? Like I can't make that as a small change unless obviously part of me also knows this answer, but like I'm curious because that's like the first set of questions that come to my mind, right? So how did you go about that?
That's totally fair. Yeah, we're just giving you the easy answers, so you should just accept those. The retrofit one is a really good question because like I've had experience with that. We don't have a specific Dagger implementation, but the retrofit one is absolutely, you're right. Like you can't convert. I mean, you could maybe convert one call, but that's pretty deep, far reaching, both broad and deep as far as your code base. The simple answer to that is that we didn't do that till way later. I think that was something we did maybe a couple months ago. So it was one of the last things that we did. It was not something that we were going to say like, okay, I've got 3 months of Kotlin under my belt and I'm going to take on the biggest architectural component that we have in our code and rewrite it. That wasn't going to happen. So
just so I'm understanding you right. So basically the approach then that you took was, okay, just like move all my activity and all my other like fragment stuff that didn't necessarily touch the core components, move that to Kotlin. And then you swapped out the underneath retrofit interface using Kotlin. Was that the approach?
Yeah, basically. Like we decided, I think, that you know anything that was going to touch everything, if something's going to touch everything, yeah, that's probably something you want to be pretty comfortable with the language before you tackle that. So yeah, we focus more on either conversions to start, which was purely just to get our feet wet and get us in the right headspace. And then from there, I think we did some light feature development, basically. And I don't even think that we necessarily started with conversions on features. I think we started new features. We started new stuff, like Don said. In Kotlin, so that instead of, you know, once you get the basic idioms and everything straightened out, it might be easier to just start fresh than converting something existing. That depends on your level of like where you want to be with stuff. But I think there's something to be said for maybe just starting a small new feature in Kotlin, and then maybe next would be a bigger size feature in Kotlin. Versus taking something huge like Dagger or retrofit.
Right. And this also makes it, I mean, if you've followed the whole approach of packaging by feature, this actually is like a very easy thing to do because like this whole feature, you could swap it out using, you can swap it out to using Kotlin. But if you're not being good about packaging by feature, like, you know, sometimes folks package by like, oh, this is all my fragments, this is all my activities, and this is all my the retrofit interface, right? If you have a single retrofit interface with all your calls, then you're going to have you break it out into smaller interfaces and then use Kotlin there so that makes it easy, or you just wait until like most of the other stuff is in Kotlin and then you swap it out, right? So I guess would be an approach. So Don, what did you do about this?
So in the majority of one of the larger apps that I work with right now, there's still a ton of Java code that we still have lying around. And so there's no reason for us to go back through and really rip apart all that Dagger code. It works. It does exactly what we want. However, all new feature development is all written in Kotlin. So if we need to create a new Dagger module, we'll do that in Kotlin. And we're going to use, the Kotlin KAPT plugin to help us with that, that generation and so forth. But in regards to something like retrofit, again, it's going to follow the same principle of, hey, this is a new feature. And this depends on how the application is architected. If you have that situation where you have this behemoth service file from Kotlin, from retrofit that has all of your endpoints in it, it may be more difficult for a lot of the apps that I built and work with. That's not the case. They're usually broken apart per feature. Like, okay, this endpoint has a put, a post, a get, and a delete. Mm-hmm. We're going to put that into its own retrofit service file. And that one may be in Kotlin for that new feature. So it's one of those things where I don't try to go back and change something that's already there. And the only time that I do is if I'm already in that file and I realize, hey, we're already going to move to Kotlin. This right now, because of my familiarity with the language, isn't going to be a humongous time investment. Maybe take me 10, 15 minutes to convert it. I'll convert it then, make the adjustments like Dan said. But again, if I was a couple of months in, I probably wouldn't do that. I might just say, hey, you know what? I need to make this change in the Java file so I can, get what I need and then call it from Kotlin. We may do that as well. So it all really depends on your familiarity and your level of confidence when changing the files with an existing project. Now, if it's a new one, I'll just start writing everything on Kotlin from the ground up.
Before that, you mentioned Capped, right? And like this is really interesting because I did have to deal with some stuff with Capped. So I'm curious, like, can you tell us what Capped is? Like, if one of you used it, what is Capped, and like, why would I use that?
Yeah. So my familiarity with APT is, which is the plugin that was used, the Android APT plugin, to help, you know, with code generation, annotations, and all that kind of stuff. My understanding from a high level is it wouldn't work that well with Kotlin. It doesn't really understand Kotlin that well, to put it at a high level. And so there is a replacement that you can use, and it's called Kotlin hyphen K-A-P-T. And so you just basically go into your build.gradle file and replace the usages of APT with K-A-P-T and so forth. And then K-A-P-T will take care of those classes and so forth. So there is a link, a page that we can link to, actually has the in-depth documentation. I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, where you can use, it's basically the Kotlin annotation processing tools is what it's known as. And I'll provide the link in the show notes if folks want to dig into that.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, it's basically for the annotation processing stuff, right? Like, I remember, like, when we use Dagger and Butterknife, and sometimes you have to actually reference this code, the annotation processing tool helps build those classes, yep. Right? And obviously, this was in Java land, and so once we had Kotlin, we needed the same thing, because you can totally still use annotations in Kotlin. And I think there's also this interesting thing about Capped 2 versus Capped, but again, that's like a discussion of its own. But we'll make sure to add like links to, so that folks basically know where to go. So along those same lines then, right? Now I'm trying to think, okay, I've gotten that part down. I know that I should be packaging my feature. I have all those down. What do we do with my view binding stuff? Because Kotlin does, because I used the straight up find view by ID like an animal, like I used to in the old days. And it's actually not too bad in Kotlin, but I mean, it still is nicer if I use something like Butterknife or Kotterknife, as I should say. Or there's like the Android extension, the Kotlin Android extensions, which is like the official thing that the JetBrains folks have. There's also, I mean, Anko's a little different, so we won't get into that. And I remember we talked to Hadi about this sometime back. But what are you guys, what is your weapon of choice for the view binding stuff?
For view binding, we use I guess it's not part of Anko, maybe it is. It's the view binding stuff that's built into one of the Kotlin extension libraries.
Got it,
so
got it. Okay.
Basically, you can just say, you can literally just call in your Java code the name, the ID of the view element, and it will import that synthetic accessor into your code automatically. So if you have a text view named first name, you would just write first underscore name dot, and then there you have all the properties of the text view. So we just use that. We were, I think if I'm recalling correctly, we were about to implement Butterknife when we were still on Java code. We were about to do Butterknife. I was like getting tired of doing all the crazy view, find view by idea stuff, ID stuff. But right then we also started going to Kotlin. So it was like, all right, let's just table that and let's just see what Kotlin has available for us. So that's what we use. But yeah, I mean, anything really would be better than doing straight Java version.
Yeah, I think the synthetic accessors is also like pretty cool. We'll add like a link to that and the way they've done that. And I think this is the Kotlin Android extensions, if I remember right.
Yep. Yeah. And don't get me wrong. There are times where it's a little curious. And when you look at the packages that it imports, it looks kind of strange.
It seems like black magic, right? I mean, like
it really does seem kind of weird, and it can get confused if you have names that are similar and things like that. So there are people I think who are maybe a little gun shy to use that, but just like anything, if you find like a system to use it and you can use it well, it's super great because you're just writing like straight up code without ever having to do ID, any kind of ID binding.
Got it. What about you, Don?
So I've used the Kotlin Android extensions on some new projects and then for some other clients, still using Butterknife. There's still a lot of Java code that we had using Butterknife, and we stuck with it and we've got it working.
So you use straight up Butterknife, the Java version of Butterknife, not Kotterknife, which is like, I think the Kotlin variant that Jake wrote for Butterknife, right?
As far as I know, yeah. I didn't implement any of the changes that might have been required in the project that I was working on for the one that uses Butterknife, but we do use Butterknife in it, though.
Got it.
But I don't see any references to Kotterknife anywhere in our application for that.
Got it. That makes sense. And that is the thing, because I remember, I think, I'm not sure if this came on the show when I was talking to Christina in the IO episode, right? So I do know she's also like, she's been using RxJava, and like I remember she gave like some talks before. And she asked me this thing that I found was so curious. She's like, I don't, because I asked her, hey, do you use like, you know, RxJava or do you use like Rx Kotlin? Because there is this thing for folks who are curious, there's like Rx Kotlin, which is actually, it's just straight up RxJava converted to Rx Kotlin. But most people I know use like straight up the regular RxJava in its Java form. But in Kotlin, like because of like the lambdas and all the other like cool higher order function stuff that you have, you can just use it directly with RxJava, right? And so when I asked her, she's like, that's the funny thing. Like I've used like straight up RxJava. I haven't used, I mean like Christina, right? She's like, I use RxJava. But the thing is, I never could understand how people using Java could use RxJava even without Kotlin, right? She was like, do you those anonymous inner classes and like those lambdas, like they look hideous, right? So she was like, how do you even understand which parameter goes where? Because there's just like so much code. And I found it funny because like I've come from the other approach, right? I've come up like straight up like pure hardcore Java, right? Like I came from Java 6. I got so comfortable using RxJava that I, like, you know, there was a point where I was comfortable with the anonymous inner classes, right? I knew exactly those declarations, action one, call one, like all those things, like, you know, mm-hmm. I knew those from the, like, so when I moved to lambdas with retro lambda, I actually found it a little tricky because I was like, wait, I don't feel comfortable because I don't know what the return type is, right?
Right.
And now I moved to this new world with Kotlin where it's actually much easier and so much more nicer because a lot of this is just like alleviated, right? So for folks who are curious, you can totally straight up use all these libraries that you love without any, at the same time with the beauty of like Kotlin as a language, right? The interop, as people keep saying interop, right? Which is like the interoperability between Kotlin and Java. And this is like one of the most amazing things. And it was because it was forced to be able to do these kind of things, right? Like the whole idea of interoperability is so that I can use libraries like RxJava without having to worry about using the Kotlin equivalent of these things, right?
Yep. And I think that's a really good point, Kaushik, because you know, being able to use all your favorite libraries, being able to just do parts of the code, all of that stuff should make it relatively gentle for you to sort of onboard Kotlin at most organizations. So picking up just a little bit here, a little bit here, you know, based on your recommendation, I started looking at RxJava, and it's true. Like I started looking at RxJava because there's more code examples. There's more chatter around that. RxKotlin is a little less documented at this point. There are books on RxJava and things like that. So even as I'm starting writing it, even though I'm writing the call sites in Kotlin, I'm looking at RxJava as sort of the source of truth for what I want to do. So, I mean, all of that to say that there's a very gentle slope as far as like getting onboarded with Kotlin. You can do as much or as little as you want. Shouldn't feel obligated to, you know, go absolutely crazy.
And thankfully, Kotlin allows you to do real nice things already with lambdas and one-liners that make it super easy to use something like RxJava. I can, you know, do that, or I can use Dagger, or I can use Butterknife, and I can just use those same annotations that I've used before and apply them in the same principle in the same manner. So I haven't ran into any situations that I know of where I've wanted to use a tool that hasn't worked yet, but then again, I haven't dove into really any of the new libraries maybe that have been out. That said, the only piece of advice that I can really give, which is really important, is anytime there's an update to the three things, update to Android Studio, update to the build tools, and update to the Android Kotlin plugin. Anytime there's a change in any one of those, you need to test it fully with your application using Kotlin, because you will get burned eventually. And it's no fault of any team itself. It's just there's a lot of moving parts going on. And sometimes things get missed, and you don't want it to destroy your entire dev cycle and your entire development team's day because you decided to upgrade a plugin and now nothing builds. So just be really aware of any updates. Test them thoroughly on your machine, on the build server, etc.
It's funny you say that. There was an issue that I ran into with Kotlin. It was when I upgraded from 112-3 is basically the version. I moved it from 112-3 to 112-4, and Capt had like some issues dealing with it, right? And I was like, oh, come on. Like, you know, I don't understand what's happening. So you're 100% right. Like, be careful. At least because, again, like, you know, the first party support is just announced, right? And Android 3.0 is the first official Android Studio, Android Studio 3.0 is the first one that officially sort of like supports Kotlin. So going forward, it probably might be easier, like the way they've like they bumped the Kotlin versions, but tread at least a tad bit carefully for now.
This really reminds me of the early days of Android Studio. Back in the day before Android Studio, for those that were developing then, a lot of us used IntelliJ with the Android plugin. So we didn't have to use Eclipse, that abomination of an IDE. Sorry if I offended a whole bunch of people. Like, I just really don't like that IDE. Mm-hmm. So we used that. And then when Android Studio came around, there was a whole slew of issues for a long time in regards to what was working, what wasn't. And every time a release of Android Studio came out, a whole new bunch of bugs popped up. So it's kind of, it's on the same phase right now with Kotlin. And I think over the next, 6 months to a year, we're going to see a lot of these things ironed out. But definitely be careful when upgrading any plugins, any versions of anything that would affect your build whatsoever.
So along those lines then, right? Because I'm pretty sure like Kotlin is such a nice language. I would find it very hard to find someone saying, oh, I don't like Kotlin, I'm going to stick to Java, right? Like almost everyone is at this point, at least like a large percentage are going to want to try Kotlin. What are some other gotchas? Because like, it's so easy to like shoot yourself in the foot, right? So what are some other kind of gotchas that you would, that you guys would suggest folks be careful about? With this transition to Kotlin, because eventually I think everyone's going to be moving there, so it's such a nicer language.
I can speak from experience.
That's
a big language, right? It's a language. We've barely scratched the surface here. We've talked over just a couple things, and if you get to the documentation, there's a whole slew of stuff that you can your eyes can go cross looking at. So my advice is basically, know it's a language, it has a ton of features, and just try to take it slow. Mm-hmm. Don't try to learn the whole language at once. Don't try to convert all of your code at once. I know this sounds obvious, but there's going to be a time where you, if you're anything like me, where you get so excited about it, you're just like, I'm just going to go crazy doing all Kotlin. And sometimes you just have to sort of slow yourself down. And related to that, I sort of tell people to kind of curb their enthusiasm when you get to this way. Like, you know all this stuff from programming, right? Like, you've been programming for years and years, and you know all the basic concepts and all this stuff. And then you start writing in Kotlin, and you're like, I can do this, and I can do that. And you start, your inclination is to just do everything the Kotlin way. Mm-hmm. Do it this perfect Kotlin way. I should always use whens here. I should always write single expression functions. I should do all these things that Kotlin lets me do. And then a few weeks later, you realize, nothing's as clear as it could be. I could have done this with a simple if else. You have all these tools at your disposal. And so you kind of think, I should do all these things, or at least I did. I started going crazy and I started writing everything as concisely as possible. And it turns out I started writing a bunch of stuff that was a lot less easy to read. So you can kind of go a little crazy with that. I certainly did. So take it slow. And don't get too overwhelmed with trying to do everything the Kotlin way. If you know something works, like the Java way, that's okay. Just write it like that. Hopefully you have someone on your team can kind of help you out or give you advice. There are Slack channels and stuff like that where people can help you out.
I love that advice because it's basically saying optimize towards making it easy for someone else to read, right? Like not necessarily like optimizing for what like the language allows you to do, right? Like you don't want to like extract all the power right away. Just like first make it easy for the developer. And then like once everyone's familiar, then you can start getting a little clever, right?
Because you're changing like, how many things at once. You're changing the language, you're changing style. There's a lot of things going on. You want to try to ease that burden a little bit. So, take it slow. And then the last thing I would say is that, I certainly did because I've been programming Java for like 15 years. I had a bunch of sort of bad habits built up in Java. One of those bad habits was sort of letting go of ugly Java code, basically. So you get so familiar with boilerplate and just things kind of being like, well, it's ugly, but it is what it is, kind of. Sometimes it happens where you're just like, I don't really have a better way of doing this. Whereas in Kotlin, that most of the times you can break out of that. If something looks wrong in Kotlin to you, like, oh, there should maybe be a simpler way to do this, there probably is. And I realize that kind of goes counter to what I just said about trying to do everything the Kotlin way. But again, if you do it in steps, if you kind of, do what you think is right, try to write it in a way that is syntactically correct and works, and then take your time and kind of fine-tuning it and revising it and making it look, idiomatic Kotlin, that's going to get you further along faster, I think. You just don't want to get hung up in sitting there at a blank screen trying to write fresh Kotlin the idiomatic way perfectly the first time. It's never going to work for you.
So my other concern was like method count, right? Don, well, like, what is your solution? Because like when you add Kotlin, it is like a huge language. What happens there, right? Because clearly we are going to like bump into methods.
Multi-dex. Next.
Yeah, I like that answer. And what have you, so like the next thing is, you guys keep saying like, oh, you know, the idiomatic way, the Kotlin way, right? What is the Kotlin way? Has someone like, nobody, again, like, I want to be careful with this, right? So there's effective Java, there isn't an effective Kotlin yet, right? Now, I know many people are trying to get like the effective Kotlin thing out there, but I also feel Kotlin is so young that there isn't necessarily going to be an effective Kotlin, because you can remember Joshua Block like compiled like years of knowledge and experience and to come up with effective Java, right? So like for folks who are like super enthusiastic, like sure, come up with those things, but like, you know, just know fully well that, you know, it is not going to like, in order, it's not, you're not going to be able to get the essence of like the language that easily. But obviously, like, you know, not to put a damper on that, like, what are some conventions that, like, has JetBrains, like, come up with something? Because, I mean, they wrote the language. You would think they have, like, some ways of saying, do this, don't do this. Like, you know, this is what we recommend. Like, are there things like that?
Look, the JetBrains documentation for Kotlin has, like, I mentioned this before, but it has that idioms page where it just kind of shows you basic structure. And as far as documentation goes for languages, mm-hmm. and, or really for anything, JetBrains' Kotlin docs are really, really good. Like, I found them superior to most technical docs that I had written or had read before. For some reason, I don't know, there's something very clear. Maybe it's just, you know, in combination with the language, but I thought that their docs were really good. So that idioms page is a nice way to start.
Mm-hmm.
I think that also being a young but enthusiastic community, I think people will be more than happy to help you. And I don't even mean just like Stack Overflow. I just mean like if you reached out to somebody and asked for help, if you don't have a buddy at work that can help you, I think people would be more than happy to help you with what's a better way to do this, what's a better way to do that. It's a pretty active, I mean, it was an active community to start with, but now with all the, with a bunch of people jumping in, I think that the support around the community is going to be even bigger. And then the last thing to do is you just probably can just contact Jake Warden and he'll tell you. Right.
Yeah, Jake Warden, Dan Kim, Don Felker, they are here to serve. So keep peppering them with questions. And we'll make sure to add a link to the coding conventions thing that you mentioned. It's the Kotlin website. And as in typical JetBrains fashion, I think, you know, it's like on GitHub and open source. So we can like add a link to that as well.
No, that's kind of a good segue into some good resources that folks could use to maybe learn about Kotlin. I mean, we do have episode 20, which we talked to Hadi. Again, for those who are not familiar with Hadi is the one who gave the introduction to Kotlin second day presentation at Google I.O. So that's the familiar face that you'll see there. He's in episode 20 talking about Kotlin. But Dan, do you have any resources maybe that you've written or anything of that nature that you'd like to share where folks could kind of read up on Kotlin and so forth?
Yeah, there's a few that kind of jumped to mind. The first is Jake Warden's talk from, I think it was end of 2015. Mm-hmm. I think it was a meetup or something like that. But for some reason, it's like a 30-minute talk. And I think he like compressed it down, but it's like a 30-minute video. And I watched that the first time and I didn't totally understand, or probably didn't understand most of it. And then the second time I watched it, everything really started to click. So there's a video on YouTube, and I'll give you guys the link.
Okay.
But that video, for some reason, really helped me specifically get kind of going on Kotlin. So I would definitely recommend that. Like I mentioned, the Kotlin docs are very good as far as technical documentation goes. You know, it's just very solid. And then to kind of plug my own work, I did write a post on our blog right after we started. I think it was like 3 months after I had written Kotlin. So I still had really no idea what I was doing. And I wrote it specifically as a beginner. I intended it to be a beginner's guide because I was like, here's like six things I really like about the language, because I didn't know what I was doing really either. And I was hoping people would comment on it and give me feedback and stuff like that. So it's super basic. It's written with very simple terminology and everything. Like, I try not to go too crazy into the official terminology. So there's a link, like we can give a link for that too. It's a pretty straightforward, easy read.
Perfect. We'll make sure like the resources portion of the show notes is like chock full of these links. Even like we'll try to consolidate the links, but even folks who've like listened to the previous episode, I remember there were some things that Hadi like mentioned, and this is like it's nice to see this thing, right? There's another talk called Kotlin in 3 minutes or Kotlin in 5 minutes or like something along those lines, and I've just like gone back and seen all those talks, and like I really like your point, Dan. Going through like watching some of these videos a second time actually makes it click better because you're sort of like warmed up to like these like numerous concepts, right?
Yeah, and then I think the other thing is to keep in mind is that everybody has different ways of learning, right? Like some people videos, like for the most part, when I watch videos and talks, they don't always come through for me. I have to read a little bit more. A book might work better for you. There are certain cases where videos work really well for me. So, you know, find something that works for you, I guess.
Cool. This is great. Dan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan.
You've always wanted to have like a casual conversation about Kotlin, right? Like without going too much in the specifics, because it's you folks have actually worked with Kotlin in Android development. So it's always nice to like get that first-hand experience. At least I know what to expect now in the future, right? So this is super helpful.
Thanks for having me.
If folks want to reach out to you with more Kotlin questions, what's the best way to do that?
They can get me on Twitter, Dan Kim. And I'm also happy to get emails, dan@basecamp.com.
Oh, I should actually give a shout out to that. The Basecamp blog, it was called Signal versus Noise, right? Like I've been a big fan of like the Signal versus Noise blog right from the early days, right? Both Jason and DHH, like they've written amazing stuff. And now I've seen like you've been adding a lot of like cool stuff there. We'll make sure to add that in the show notes as well. It's a Medium blog now, right? Like it's ported over to Medium.
Yep, everything moved over to Medium, yeah.
So we'll make sure to add a link there. Like a lot of good stuff that Dan and like all of the good folks at Basecamp have been writing is in that. So we'll make sure to add that. Don, if folks want to pepper you with your Kotlin experience and the other questions they have, what's the best way to do that?
The best way is going to be to reach me on Twitter, and that's going to be @DonFelker. Now, Kaushik, you're the new kid on the block who's been experiencing Google, and it's always good to get a good synopsis of opinions. Folks want to ask you your thoughts about particulars of Kotlin. What's the best way to get a hold of you?
I am happy to share my experiences at Kaushik Gopal on Twitter. That's usually the best way. We can share this journey of me learning and not knowing anything. it's always good to start learning something. So thank you all so much for listening. Again, Dan, thank you so much for being here. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We will catch you in the next episode.
Bye-bye.
That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.